Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That's the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. That is Nick Wright. Any thoughts before we dive in for three amazing hours of television?
I'm excited. You worked out yesterday. Chris worked out this morning. I was with you guys in spirit.
Spirit only.
I'm ready to rock. Let's do this.
Let's do a show, shall we? Lots to get to on this one. One of LeBron's former teammates has a warning for the young Lakers. We've got some big comments from Big Ben. And Jerry Jones has a lot of thoughts on his starting quarterback. That's where we start this morning with America's team. Last year at this time, we were wondering how good the Cowboys were going to be with Dak Prescott entering year two. This year, without Dez Bryant, without Jason Witten, we're wondering how good the Cowboys could be with Dak entering year three. Expectations are high, but according to Jerry Jones, the Cowboys have put Dak in the best position to succeed this year. Take a listen.
You know, he came in with an inordinate ability to slow it down. We've put in offense that complement his skills. We put in offense that complements what he did at Mississippi State. We've done what we should be doing, and that's put an offense together that is friendly to him.
What is that, CeCe? What did he mean there? What is an offense that's friendly to a quarterback? What does that mean?
We hear that terminology, but very seldom do we have anyone try to explain it to us. Like, anyone that's cheering for their quarterback would love, yeah, man, we like the system that is friendly for our quarterback. So what is a friendly system for a quarterback like Dak? We know that Dak and Jerry does know a lot of football, so you have to give him some credit. And where Zach went to school, Mississippi State, the type of offense that they ran in the SEC, so they've blended some of those RPOs or run quarterback options. But also at Mississippi State, they had a dominant running game. The only thing that they don't have now, they had a good tight end, all right? They've had a couple weapons and stuff to throw to, so he has that. But the ability for the quarterback to be a dual threat and also to have a dominant offensive line and a very, very physical running game. That means we're going to commit so much power to between the tackles that you're going to have to commit at least seven defenders to stop that, which is going to give this quarterback easier lanes to throw on the outside and make the coverages a lot easier to read. So when people talk about that, when Jerry's talking about a system that is friendly to Dak. Now, to Aaron Rodgers, what is a quarterback-friendly system? Spread everybody out.
Yeah.
Let him call every play. So there are different systems that are more friendly based on the skill set. But I do believe that Jerry and them, they do have it right as far as putting Dak in a system that he can play in for a long time and be successful. It's just, do they have enough playmakers that go with the power that they present?
I think Jerry's right. I also think it's a little insulting to Dak. If this is the system that's the most friendly for him, a system that's going to be run heavy, you're going to be focused on Zeke, focused on the offensive line, easy reads, college-type things that you're describing. I think Jerry is correct. I also think that if I'm Dak Prescott, I'm like, man, I got to go prove to him I'm more than that. Because this would not be the best system for the best quarterbacks. This is not the system Drew Brees wants. This is not the system Aaron Rodgers wants. This is not the system Tom Brady wants. Go down the list. This is a system that is perfect if you are saying, our quarterback is the guy that you were saying he was last year. Can't drop him back 30, 35 times. We can't say Dak go. He can win us a game, but the plan going into a game can't be
not
from the first quarter for Dak to go win us the football game. So I don't think Jerry's wrong, and I know he's trying to do right by Dak Prescott, not only with the team but with the commentary. But in any job, if we're saying we're trying to help you out by having you do less. That's not a compliment.
Well, this is the thing. Sometimes it's how you take it, because Dak is not a veteran quarterback. He's played two NFL seasons. It's nice that the system in Dallas, that they know their personnel. What would be more tragic is, you know something, they would say, forget our offensive line. We're going to have them forget run block. We're going to have them pass protect 45 times.
Sure.
And we're going to get you a bunch of speedy guys. We're going to spread it out and have you. Now, that might be the system for Dak when he becomes a veteran. Tom Brady's not in the same system that he was in his first 5 years in the league. So we have seen guys grow as they grow their game. Then we see the coaches, they're able to do more things and have more audible power at the line of scrimmage.
How much of this is because he struggled last year and you want to get him off to a good start? You have Zeke in your lineup now right off the bat. You want to just give him a little confidence starting the season off.
Part of it is the struggle, because when they put more responsibility on him, he didn't do better.
Right.
He didn't play better.
He
wasn't a force multiplier. So it's also going back to his college days, who they scouted, why they drafted him in the third round, what type of system. So all those things check out. Yes, we're right. We do have the right quarterback. This is the type of system we believe he can thrive in. And I don't believe it's a I wouldn't be insulted. You know, I've been around great coordinators, great coaches, and they're like, Chris, we're going to get you the ball between the numbers. Chris, we're going to try to dominate the red zone. We're going to give you some attempts in the – they didn't say, you know, Chris, we're going to open up the game. We're going to throw three fly patterns to you. No, that wasn't my skill set. So as a pro and as a professional person, you have to be able to rely on the people around you that can give you insight that actually make you better. And sometimes you doing less in a certain area, it's better for everyone. It's better for the group. It's better for the team. It's better for your office. Like, sometimes it's better.
If they are going to really kind of continue along the line of designing an offense that helps Dak the most, I would try to add one component that they've had a little bit of in the last couple of years, but not as much as I would like, and that's designed runs for him. Like, Dak right now, over the last couple of years, he's 10th in the NFL for designed runs by the quarterback. You might say, oh, that's a lot, but you got to keep in mind, there's 15 quarterbacks that you're not going to call a designed run for him ever all season long, aside from a quarterback sneak. So among the quarterbacks who can run, he doesn't run that much. Now, Dak's not the fastest guy in the world, but when you have that offensive line and the power he brings, and I believe the durability he brings, I think that's an element of the game that the Cowboys could try, especially this year when they are more limited from receiving threats than they've been at any time in his 3 years there. That's one element I would like to see the Scott Linehan bring more of this season for Dallas.
How well is Dak Prescott set up to succeed? Is what Jerry Jones saying correct, that everything is sort of, all the pieces are in place for him to have another big year like he did in year one?
Everything is in place for him to continue to grow, but this is not the most talented. This is the least talented team that he's played with in his third year. So everything, we know they caught lightning in the bottle with that first round pick and that third round pick with him and Zeke. That franchise is set for a long time. But saying in year number three, will we look back on it and be like, wow, man, that was a great opportunity for Dak that he missed out on or took advantage of? I don't think so. It will be where Dak became a better passer. He became a better leader. And because of their lack of proven veterans, he elevated his game. So if they can throw the ball, he's going to get a lot of credit for that.
All right, let's talk about him becoming a better passer for a moment, because this is one where your eye saw something my eye didn't, and after year two, it looks like your eye was the correct one. I saw his rookie year, not only how well he took care of the football, but the 8 yards per attempt. It wasn't dinking and dunking. It was what I thought were big throws, big plays for a really good team, the best team in football in the regular season that year in my eye, and he was really good in the playoff game, the second half in particular as well. And so I went into year year two saying, listen, Dak Prescott is one of your top flight quarterbacks in the league, can make the throws you want all the quarterbacks to make outside of maybe the rare few Aaron Rodgers, Cam Newton guys that can make really spectacular strong arm throws. That's not what you saw. Going into year two, you cautioned against it. You were proven right last year. How does he expand his throwing repertoire? What are the things that, even with the success of year one, you weren't seeing that made you skeptical about his ability to be a high-volume passer?
Right. I think he's more than adequate in the pocket now, but I would like him to be able to throw the ball on the move. I would like Dallas and Scott Linehan to be able to move the pocket more because he is a good athlete. Now, just because you have a robust offensive line, typically the only reason why you move the pocket is because your line is shabby. Well, why can't you do the same thing? You got a big, powerful, athletic line. Also move the pocket and have him to throw more on the run. He did more of that in college. So they can't book him to find out where he's going to be. If I could move the pocket, if I could roll him to the left, if I could roll him to the right, I think they're going to be a lot better in their intermediate passing. Besides moving the pocket, I want to throw the ball down the field because we know that Dallas, people are going to try to take him out of their running game. They're going to have great coverages on the outside. And I like the one-on-one matchups to be able to give the wide receivers an opportunity on the outside because you can't depend on 10, 12 play drives in the NFL. You need that big play. And so in those two areas, if I can create more big plays by throwing the ball outside and if I can move the pocket to so that people don't know where he's going to be and for him to be more accurate on the move, I think he would be much improved.
And for the audience, you want to paint the picture of when Chris says move the pocket, think of Lamar's touchdown pass where he's rolling out to the right from just the other night that we saw where that's a designed rollout where the offensive line goes with him and guys come into his view as he's rolling to the side.
That's typically when you're moving the pocket or rolling out too, you only have the quarterback reading half of the field. I'm not trying to say he can't read the whole field, but that's one of the pleasures.
He's not going to throw all the way across his body across the field.
It's more quarterback friendly.
All right, all eyes on Dak Prescott as he enters year three. We'll talk much more about this coming up. On the other side though, is Big Ben prepared to have his best season yet? Big Ben seems to think so. That's next on First Things First. All right, moving on to the Steelers and Big Ben, or not as Big Ben, because, you know, he shed a few pounds this offseason. Roethlisberger set to make his preseason debut Saturday against the Tennessee Titans. One longtime coach called this training camp, quote, the best of Big Ben's career. Ben echoed the positivity on Tuesday, saying, quote, my arm feels stronger than it ever has. All right, CC, what do you make of Roethlisberger's confidence entering year 15?
I do like it because it is an about face from the Ben that we saw a couple years ago. I don't know how much I want to play. This might be my last year. I hate guys around that 35 mark where they start waffling as if they're going to retire. And then all of a sudden, oh, I'm in the best shape ever. My arm, oh, man, my arm is fit as a fiddle. Stronger than ever. I'm glad because that, even if Ben didn't feel that way as a veteran player, that's what the other players want to hear.
Sure.
And the people that are paying you a lot of money, that's what they want to hear. There's one job basically as a professional athlete being in the NFL. Well, no one wakes up and say, I don't want to get arrested, but don't get arrested, but just stay in shape. Like it's not that difficult. Just stay in shape. And Ben is sending all the right message points. He's been consistent since the end of the season. He was kind of rejuvenated. He might want to play several more years. So Ben's got one of the great arms. If you watch those video right there, watch how easy he throws the ball. He is a big, burly guy. He was born. He don't need no throwing coach. He was born to throw the football. I mean, he's got a natural throwing motion. He can throw the ball anywhere on the field. He's worked on his release. He did have a bigger windup when he first got into the league. But now he can get it in his hand, get it out of his hand really quick, or he can buy time and throw that thing way down the field.
When Cam Newton came into the league, the quarterback, if you were brave enough to do a cross-racial comparison that he compared most to, was Ben Roethlisberger as far as size, as far as ability to shake off hits, big arm. And in an odd way, a lot of the stuff that we criticize Cam for can apply to Ben as well. Not the footwork fundamental stuff, but a guy who, because he's always been the biggest, usually the strongest, the best athlete in a room, has, for Cam, it's not always worked on his fundamentals. For Ben, it's not always been in the best shape. Like, he hasn't had to be. That arm doesn't have, that arm's going to do what that arm does no matter what. But a lot of those criticisms
we... And he played the style that was a little more throwbackish.
Yeah.
And the guys who played with that look like that.
That's exactly right. The style Ben played, it almost made sense that he shouldn't be clean-shaven. He might be, you know what I mean? Like, he should...
A little slovenly.
No, honestly.
Like playing in Pittsburgh, playing outdoors.
100% that, like, it wouldn't almost, in your mind's eye, make sense for him to be, like, chiseled, you know, model-type Tom Brady latter version. And so he's gotten a pass on a lot of that stuff. But the older you get, the more important it is that you're in better shape as far as your body holding up. And the messaging to your team. Like, that's the thing. That anyone, I think, you don't have to be a pro athlete. If you have a work environment where there is one person who's clearly either the highest paid or the best or the leader, if they are not as prepared as the other people, it's not only sends a bad message, but it's a little demoralizing. It's a little bit like, you got to be, really? Like, I don't make as much money as you. I'm not getting the profile of you, and I'm working harder than you. And so it's important from a leadership standpoint that Ben be doing these things. And the one other part of this, to where I don't want to go over the top giving him credit, because I do think there is some self-serving part of it, is the contract. Next year is the year he would be getting a new contract, because you don't let quarterbacks hit free agency. He has 2 years left on his deal. They wouldn't give him a new one right now. But going into next year is when it would be his time. Right now he's the 12th highest paid quarterback in football. It's hard for him and his representation to start the conversations about an extension if he's not saying, I'm going to play for 5 years. It's the best I've ever felt. This is the best shape I've ever been in. So, like, there is that behind the scenes as well that I think maybe his agent said to him, can you stop saying you're not going to play much longer?
Could you?
Because we might be able to get one more contract out of the Pittsburgh Steelers.
All right, so Ben Roethlisberger checked off a lot of the boxes that we'd like him to check off in the preseason. He's staying in shape, feels good, staying healthy, coming out for his preseason debut. The only other box is, you know, am I in a good position to lead this team past the one team, our one nemesis that we've not been able to in the last couple years, and that's the New England Patriots. What does he need to do to get himself and this team ready, primed, mentally and physically to beat this team?
The number one thing that the Pittsburgh Steelers, starting with Mike Tomlin, Ben Roethlisberger, and the rest of that team needs to do to get ready for New England is do not mention them until they are on the schedule.
Because what happened last year?
And every year, you know, either game plan wise, focus on the schedule. Focus on trying to get home field advantage. If you play them in the playoffs, you do not want to go to Foxborough. Try to get home field advantage. Concentrate on your opponents. Don't be thinking about New England when Jacksonville is actually the game that you're playing. Don't be doing interviews and giving sound bites about New England for later in the season. Concentrate on the Pittsburgh Steelers. They have more than enough talent. And the second thing that they have to do, besides not concentrating on New England until they play them, is Ben them can't turn the football over when they do play them. All right, because that defense that they have is not a great defense. I don't think Pittsburgh's defense can stop Tom Brady and them from going up and down the field, so I believe it would be a high-scoring game. But Ben can't turn the ball over when they do face New England. So those would be my two things about what would be the game plan for the Pittsburgh Steelers going forward and how they can get an advantage on New England.
And I'm going to add one other part to it, which is just – throughout the season, you can't have Big Ben be one of the reasons we're talking about the Steelers aside from leading up to a game and right after a game. We know there's 53 guys on a team. Mike Tomlin runs his locker room a little bit differently. You got AB there, who's a vibrant personality. L. Bell and his contract and the pending free agency. We know some of these things are going to be stories. But the nonsense of after a game saying, I wanted to spike the football when you lose the biggest regular season game you've played in 5 years. I don't think the anthem stuff will be an issue or this year the way it was last year, but the noise surrounding that quarterback is different than almost Breeze, Rodgers, Brady, Russell Wilson. Like, he brings negative attention to where they're a subject for things off the field more than the other star quarterbacks do. That I'm not a big believer that's a huge deal, but coaches, Chris is, so many people say those distractions are real. Big Ben contributed to those last year. Period, point blank. There's no reason for that, and he shouldn't do that this year.
And beat the teams you're supposed to beat. They just have not done well against teams that they are predicted to win. They've done good against the highest-ranked teams in the league.
All right, coming up, why doesn't anybody want Dez Bryant? Jerry Jones is asking. That's next. This is First Things First. Hey, don't miss the Big Three Championship Friday on Fox. Chris Anderson and Power will meet Drew Gooden in Three's Company to battle for the championship. Catch all the action starting at 8 Eastern on Fox or stream it live on the Fox Sports app. I'm ready for this. Talking about it a lot. I'm excited.
Go ahead. I apologize.
Oh, no. I'm ready. I was going to say something.
Oh, you're going to be at the game Friday yes. night, the championship. Shout out yes. to Corey Maggette, Big Three MVP.
Oh, yes.
Which is awesome. Go ahead.
Birdman, sir. Defensive Player of the Year. Nancy Lieberman, Coach of the Year. Greatest women's basketball player ever.
Oh, whoa, and, whoa, okay. I mean,
who?
Oh, okay. Well, so there's Reggie Miller's sister. There's Cheryl Miller.
Yes. The people Sue in Bird is they good. Consider the, they consider those the two greatest players.
Okay. All right. Well,
it wasn't like I didn't know who Cheryl was.
No, I know, but I was just pumping the brakes.
I've been a fan of Cheryl since she played with the McGee twins, Pam and Paula.
Diana Taurasi last night went 12-0 in elimination games in her career, approaching the Bill Russell 21-0.
Of course, you're a millennial, man. Of course, you're going to say someone.
Diana.
Nancy Lieberman, shout out.
Okay. Cube and Clyde are here on Friday. Clyde Drexler and Ice Cube will be here with us on Friday. Talk about
like who?
I'm trying to hold it in. But one of the the greatest Seinfeld line of all time was when Elaine found out that Reggie Miller was a basketball player, and yes. she goes, "Cheryl Miller has a baby brother who plays basketball." I had to do it. See, I couldn't hold back. Oh, it was sports related. Time for stories to start your morning, brought to you by the unexpected energy of ExxonMobil. The Browns appear to be happy with the progress of Josh Gordon. Hugh Jackson said Gordon, who returned to the facility this past weekend, will practice very soon. No exact timetable, but still optimistic. CC, how much does the team need Josh Gordon?
Well, I mean, a team that's won one game in 2 years, it's nice to have him there, but it's just too many things have gone on with Josh, with this organization, that it's nice to see him. It's nice to be able to see him play some football. It'd be nice to see the Josh Gordon just a little bit, 1,000-yard receiver, because looking back 2013, 2014, that's a long time when you talk about, well, when was a guy's last highlight? So I'm pulling for Josh. I don't think the Browns need him. I think the Browns will surprise a lot of people this year.
I think that if you get anything close to the Josh Gordon of old, then it adds to what could be a dynamic passing attack. But it's to your point, that's a big, I mean, it's a big bridge to build to get from 5 games in the last 4 football seasons to where,
wow,
you know, I mean, 5 games since the 2014 season to where, okay, he's going to be the Josh Gordon of old. He is back in the building. We saw him, if you watch Hard Knocks last night, little vignette at the end of the episode. It's interesting also hearing Hugh Jackson seems very excited about Josh being there. Todd Haley.
Oh, he's going to play.
Oh, he's going to play. There's no question he's going to play, assuming he's there.
All right, Doug Peterson had some interesting things to say about another team. In Peterson's new book, he was critical of the Jaguars' lack of aggressiveness in the AFC title game. When the Jags knelt before halftime, Peterson said, quote, "If they lose this game, this is why." Nick, is Peterson out of bounds here?
I mean, I don't think he's out of bounds because I like this type of honest commentary, but I also like Jalen Ramsey's honest commentary. So I know some people would say you shouldn't. It's one thing if it's flippant or offhand, put down in a book. Listen, I think Doug Marrone screwed this up. I think they didn't trust their quarterback. I knew they were going to lose in this moment. And then add to your own legend by then, you know what we did? Halftime of our NFC Championship game against Minnesota later in the day, we went for it, and they got a field goal late in that game against Minnesota. I'm cool with it. I know I think some people in the coaching community would say this is one you keep to yourself.
No, I think Doug did the right thing because based on what they were trying to do as the Philly franchise, they were the underdog. He wasn't criticizing Doug Marrone. He was criticizing the situation and the decision. Any coach who would have been in that situation, Doug would have talked about it because what his team was trying to do? Because people think, oh, they went for it in the NFC Championship. No, Nick Foles was not playing good. They decided going into that game against one of the best defenses, we are going to throw the ball down the field, and Nick Foles is going to win us into the Super Bowl. So that was the collective decision that Doug Peterson and that organization made. So I don't have a problem with it.
All right, let's stick with the Eagles. The Nick Foles injury scare appears to be over for now. Foles will play in the Eagles' third preseason game against the Browns. This while Carson Wentz continues to work towards game one of the regular season. CC, what do the Eagles need to see from Nick Foles in this upcoming preseason game?
I don't think they need to see anything. I think the news is the best thing for Philadelphia. He's not going to miss any extended time, because anytime you see a quarterback and he's throwing the ball and his hand comes forward without that ball and you see someone on his arm, there is a chance. That is the most vulnerable time for a quarterback. So him just being healthy, he knows the system. This organization has tremendous confidence in Nick Foles. So him just being available, I think, is tremendous news and confidence that will run throughout that team.
And I think Philadelphia is a well-run team, so I didn't think a Nick Foles injury was going to make them speed up the timetable for Carson Wentz, but now you can remove that entirely. I know their hope always has been Wentz to play week one, but if he weren't ready, not quite where they wanted him to be, and Foles were out, then maybe that's a tougher conversation about do we want to start Nate Sudfeld. Now they don't have to worry about that.
Some of the people need to start talking about Sudfeld, though, because he has really looked good this preseason.
He has looked good this preseason.
What's his name?
Sudfeld, but we can call him Sudfeld. I'm good with it. Yeah. I'll allow it.
Finally, Adrian Peterson signed with Washington this week. He's had some interesting comments for his naysayers. Peterson said his doubters, quote, don't really know about football. CC, what do you make of AP's thoughts?
No, I don't know nothing about football. That's all I did. That's all I've been talking about for the last 30 years is football. At some point in an athlete's career, he's going to get criticized. And at some point, people are going to see that, you know something? This is not the same freakish athlete that I saw come onto the national scene as a high school player. Like, he's one of the greatest athletes that we have ever seen. He is one of the true, rare physical specimens. In high school, you had to ask yourself the question, can a high school football player play in the NFL? If there was a handful of guys, Adrian Peterson would be one of those guys you would be talking about.
In high school, you had to ask yourself, is it safe for the guys he's playing against?
Yes.
That was a real question. Like, it might not be fair to this running back out of Palestine, Texas, but for everyone on the schedule, like, is it safe to ask guys to play against him? That's why you were having that could he go straight to the NFL conversation.
Yeah, people doubted him when he blew out his knee in Washington. Horrific knee injury. Came back in less than a year. Like, people have doubted Adrian, but at this stage of your career, if you look at all the great backs, absent of Jim Brown, who walked away in his prime, and Barry Sanders walked away where he had a lot of football left, the rest of them, look at their numbers at the end of their career. It's not a matter of knowing football or not. We know that Father Time is undefeated. And Adrian Peterson in the last couple years has not looked like the Adrian that we have seen. So saying that, you know something, we don't believe he's going to rush for 1,000 yards. Like, no.
But this is the mentality, by the way, that makes him who he is. This is why I always have empathy for athletes that post-career make some very daring career change investment thing and lose their money, because that's the mentality that got them where they are. Like, you don't get to Adrian Peterson from Palestine, Texas, with a really tough upbringing. But you don't become him without proving people wrong. You blow out your knee. You're back, 6 months later, and you rush for 2,000 yards. And then you're kicked out of the league for a year for some really awful off-the-field stuff. The next year, you come back, you rush for 1,500 yards. Like, you can't do those things without having the mentality of, man, I'm always better than anyone thinks I am. Everyone's been doubting me. I've always been proving them wrong. Eventually, though, your doubters are right. Unfortunately for him, I think that will be this season, but I get why he feels this way.
But then he has the season like he did last year, last 2 years with two different teams, didn't really work out. What do you think Washington is expecting to get out of him, realistically?
I mean, they're getting a guy that they would like to be dependable on first and second down. If Adrian, if he wanted to prove football or prove the doubters wrong, over the last several years, you know what he'd been doing in the offseason? He would have been catching the football. so he can play on third down. So now he's like a dinosaur in the NFL. We're not looking for a big running back just to run between the tackles and everything, can only play on first and second down. No, the league is totally different. So Adrian's style has not changed, all right? He's not as explosive as he used to be. And Adrian is a volume ball carrier, and no team is going to commit to giving him the football 20, 25 times because he's at his best carry 15 to 25.
Yep.
And now he's not going to get the 15 carries.
And that's why you might think logically, well, he learned from last year. I don't know that that's the case. I think last year he said, well, of course I wasn't successful in New Orleans. Getting the ball is 6, 7, 8 times a game. That's not me. I get to Arizona. First game in Arizona, I pop them for 125. Then they don't give me the ball enough. Couple games later, they give me the ball 37 times. I pop them for 175. I'm still that guy. Like, because he had moments last year. Last year, he had two monster games. Every other game, I think his mentality is, well, that's, guess what? You didn't give me the ball 25 times. You didn't give me the ball 25 times. I'm still that guy. It's hard for, man, right. It's hard to be this great for this long and then have the realization that we have, which is, oh, you're not that anymore.
Especially at that position. All right, moving on. It is August 22nd. Math tells me we are 15 days away from the start of the 2018 NFL season. And by last check, Dez Bryant was still unemployed. Not with a team, not on a roster, not running routes. He visited the Browns on Thursday, but with the return of Josh Gordon to Cleveland, Dez became odd man out. Besides Dez and his agent, one person is surprised Dez is jobless, and that's Cowboys owner Jerry Jones.
I am surprised. He's a guy that has the skills to help a team. I don't know what kind of shape Dez is in. Knowing Dez and how hard he worked, I bet he's in really fine shape to, at this point, join an NFL team. I know he was counting on a team getting in a position to really have a need so that he could meld his availability up with that. I think he'll be on a team.
CeCe, what was the skepticism we saw when you were listening to that soundbite?
Oh, Jerry had to catch himself.
Yeah, he sure did.
He had to catch himself.
Yeah.
Now, since he's played in the league, he's only played in Dallas. Mm-hmm. And if you at that time, you would think that Jerry would have a very formed opinion of who Dez is.
And what he does in the offseason.
I don't know if he's going to be in shape. It's August, what?
22nd.
What? Has Dez shown him in August or he might not be in shape in the offseason? That's the only reason why Jerry then, oh,
I'm sure.
Well, why'd you say that if you know him? So that right there, and I'm going to tell you the biggest test is when Dallas gets someone hurt, do they call Dez Bryant? Because they could have easily and been more salary cap friendly, they could have had Dez play at a reduced salary on the Cowboys this year. They would have one more answer at wide receiver, but they felt as if it was better. Not for the Cowboys, but for Dak and the quarterback moving forward to not have Dez there. So Jerry should stop answering questions about Dez. What he should say is, I'm going to comment on my players. I wish Dez well. But there's obviously people in the NFL, they don't feel as if Dez Bryant improves their roster. Now, I believe that they're wrong. I believe he still should be playing in the league. But a lot of times, there's a lot of information out there on players that people in the public don't know. And that's what I'm worried about in this case. Has Dez and what he's been involved in, has it scared off some people? Because he should be on the NFL roster.
Nick, what's his biggest challenge, though,
himself.
At this point?
Well, right now, himself and the makeup, because this is part of the math maybe we didn't do well enough. Wide receiver needy teams, and who are their quarterbacks? And by that, I mean this. Buffalo needs wide receivers. They're going to be going with a rookie in Josh Allen in short order. San Francisco needs wide receivers. They're going to be going with a young, as far as experienced, quarterback in Jimmy Garoppolo in short order. The Jets need wide receivers. They're going to be going with a rookie quarterback maybe as soon as week one. And so if there were a team that had the quarterback, the wide receiver room that the Jets have with a proven, established veteran quarterback, then maybe Dez makes sense. But that's not – the Saints don't need a wide receiver. You could argue the Patriots do, but he's not going to New England. Like, there's – you go down the list, the Packers, they're not bringing – they drafted four wide receivers this year. They're not bringing in Dez Bryant, even if I thought initially it could make sense for them moving on from Jordy. Like, Dez and Dak – Chris's point that the Cowboys made this move in part to help Dak, if you're the Jets – you're Mike Maccagnan, and you're like, we want to help Sam Darnold. The Cowboys had more intel on this guy than anybody. They thought he was bad for Dak. If you're the Bills, we want to help Josh Allen. So that's part of the problem here. The teams that need wide receivers the most are mostly teams starting young or unproven quarterbacks. That's not helping him. And sometimes life's funny and unfair, and sometimes you make your own bed. Man, he should have answered John Dorsey's damn phone calls a couple weeks ago. Period, point blank, when they had no idea where Josh
Gordon
was. Because
all of this happened a week earlier, maybe Josh Gordon doesn't end up.
48 hours early.
Right.
I think Josh Gordon still comes back. Like, I don't –
But once he signed, he's on the team.
But Dez is on the team. Yeah. Like, that's a part that I don't – and I don't know why Dez was delaying. His tweets made it seem like it was getting in shape or football condition.
Yeah, he had a couple missed messages. I mean, it's just
– it's hard to decipher.
Yeah, because he said he wanted to spend time with his family. He said he wanted to heal up. Mm-hmm. He tried to play with injuries before. But, man, you need to get on a team. All right. I remember Denny Green said, I don't care how much you think you can play. You need one of these 32 teams to fall in love with you enough to give you a contract and bring you on the roster. And that's what Dez needs. Doesn't look like Baltimore is going to try. And even the teams that you've mentioned, most of those teams have a veteran. If you look at the Jets, they got the receiver from Seattle.
Paul Richardson?
Curse. Okay. Pierre Garçon in San Francisco. Yeah. So these guys have veteran guys. They don't have as much talent as Dez. But you know what? They're good route runners. They're good teammates. They're also good students of the game. So you have seen that, our lack of people trying to bring Dez in. Because, yeah, he's probably better than those players. But these general managers and coaches have decided that these players are better for my roster.
Is there any part of this that has turned into sort of an education and self-awareness for Dez Bryant? Do you think, just knowing what you know about him, has he stopped and said, okay, maybe this is on me. Maybe I'm my biggest problem. I'm in my own way here.
No, not from the latest communications. With John Dorsey, they can't get a hold of you. And then I saw a little bit of the video. He went to a job interview. It looked like he was going to the gym to play. We was playing basketball or something. No, I don't think so. I have to see the results of a guy becoming aware because, man, it's just one of my pet peeves right now. There are so many people, and most of them famous, doing big, big things and really, really talented. They're not aware of what their life is. They're not aware of how people perceive them. So, no, I'm not going to give them credit. Just like, remember Carmelo Anthony? No, I'm not going to. This is not going to be an earth-shattering move, him being balled out. No, these guys obviously have not still learned from it. So I'm pulling for Dez to be on a team because he should be on the NFL roster.
All right, let's take a break. Coming up, can Eli Manning lead the Giants to a bounce back season? Coach Eric Mangini joins the conversation next on First Things First. Now. Welcome back to First Things First. Always a good time when former head coach Eric Mangini joins the program.
That is a gorgeous suit, Coach.
Thank you.
It's gorgeous. Just it glows.
Why you got to piggyback on my statement? Just let it sit.
No, it happens to be a gorgeous. It's shimmering. And
yeah, you were going to say that if I didn't. Mm-hmm, Jenna.
Not what I was going to say.
Nice dress, Jenna.
Thank you so much. Coach, as you tell me all the time, 37 is the new 27. I never knew what you meant, and now I do. Eli Manning just turned 37. Feels as encouraged as ever, coming off a disastrous last season. As a result, the Giants were gifted the second overall pick. They chose running back Saquon Barkley. Some said they should have drafted Eli's replacement there. Eli says he wants to prove the Giants did not make a mistake.
The whole Giants, the organization, Coach Shermer, everybody, and how they handled the offseason and saying they had faith and confidence in me and wanted me to be the quarterback. I didn't know what was going to happen this year, so I feel like, hey, I've got a second chance, and I want to prove them right, prove that they made the right decision and sticking with me and that I can play at a high level and win a lot of football games for the Giants.
All right, Coach, shy of wins, how does he do that? How does Eli Manning go out there? What is the key for him to be really, really successful this year?
Well, I think they made the right decision as well, and I
do believe in Eli Manning. We talk all the time about quarterbacks who have no Super Bowl wins, and Eli's gotten two, but Eli gets pushed in the back of all those conversations. And he's got two against New England Patriots, which, you know, isn't the easiest thing in the world to do. He's much more prepared this season for success than he was last season. They had a lot of things go really wrong in New York. Now they've improved the left side of that offensive line substantially through free agency, mm-hmm. through the draft. They've got a legitimate running game. You've got receivers that can create some problems. Odell looks like he's in the right mindset. This offense has a chance, I think, to be very good. And it's going to be also interesting to see the effect that Pat Schumer has on the offense as well. So I imagine this will be a really good year for Eli.
So the guy that they could have drafted his replacement with, that pick, that's the guy that's the key to me for Eli this year, Saquon Barkley. Because you guys, both of you, and Chris and I were talking about this before the show, talk about the numbers game a lot when we're talking about the Dallas Cowboys, for example. That Dak's going to be facing a lot of eight-man fronts, which means he's going to have man-to-man coverage with his receivers. Can those guys beat it? You can't, unless I don't have the numbers quite right. I don't know how you can play an eight-man front if Odell Beckham's on the field. Unless you're fine with single covering Odell. Or you could, Chris, you were trying to describe the way you could theoretically double Odell, but only if you have a double tight end, single back.
You play
back.
A 4-3 and you play cover two.
No, I'm saying with an eight-man front.
Yes.
Doubling Odell with an eight-man front is almost impossible. They could try on a certain downs, but very difficult. So if you're going to have to double Odell throughout the season, if Saquon can be the guy that a lot of people believe he is, which is a guy who, in a typical offense, would demand an eight-man front against him, well, now all of a sudden it's pick your poison with the Giants, and that sets Eli up to succeed. Because if the teams are really focused on slowing down Odell and really focused at when they can on slowing down Saquon, you still have a guy that I think, Evan Engram, they spent a first-round pick on him, is poised to have a big season. I like Sterling Shepard on the other side. Like, you have other guys that can still make plays, and they are going to have no attention paid to them. But I think it starts with Saquon. That Saquon instantly is the guy that we've seen these top five running backs be, where whether it's Gurley or Zeke, guys that the moment they step on the field as pros, they're like, oh, that's one of the best running backs in the league, and you have to account for him defensively. That's what I think can help Eli more than anything this year.
Yeah, I think Saquon is a dynamic player, but running backs don't necessarily force you into a seven or eight man box. It's the offensive line. That's the reason why, because you get so many holes, they're getting to the second level, and you feel, coach feels, I got to put an extra guy in the box. So as we talk about Barkley, yeah, he's important, but let's look at Todd Gurley's rookie year. Sensational. What about his sophomore season?
Not good.
Offensive line wasn't good. Then they went out and got Whitworth from Cincinnati. He solidified their offensive line, and then he's back on MVP candidate. So you can't talk about Barkley without talking about that offensive line. And the offensive line concentration should be from the center to the right guard and to that right tackle. They got problems there. And until they solidify that, you know, as far as Pat Shermer, are they going to be able to be physical on that side to be able to create that seven-man box? Like, that's what they're going to have to do. But that offensive line, that they will determine if that pick was the right pick. And can they come off the ball and be physical?
Can you just talk a little bit about Eli Manning's trajectory a little bit? Was last year sort of an outlier year because of everything that went wrong? Or do we generally see quarterbacks that have a bad year turn around at this age and have a great year again? I mean, how do you game plan what, you know, how he's going to be?
Well, Chris brought up the right side of the line, and that still needs some improvement. But there are so many holes in that on that offense last year that they've addressed a lot of them. Getting Odell back, and he can be the player that he hopes he can be and the Giants hope they can be. Getting a legitimate running back, being able to fix the left side of the offensive line, having a tight end that can affect the middle of the field. They've fixed a lot of those holes. They haven't fixed all of them. There were so many issues. It was hard to really address one. And
yeah, you plug one, water shooting up over here.
Yeah, and it just becomes a situation
it
where
was
you're,
an odd
you're managing it.
So it's not as if we're trying to determine where Eli is going to be after that season. It's what were we thinking about Eli Manning maybe before last season if the Giants had been healthy. Any team that we see have that year with the types of injuries they're going to have, it's not old age. It's a matter of it's go time for Eli. We know he's won two Super Bowls, but right now the franchise, they need him to play at a level that he hadn't played at the last couple years.
Well, let's also add in the fact that the defense wasn't very good. The defense, they spent a ton of money on. They expected a lot of really good things from it. But the Giants were behind in a bunch of games. So not only do you have problems, but now you're limited in what you can do because you're chasing points. So it's not even like you can maintain the balance between run and pass. That was taken away in addition. So all those things combined really put them in a difficult spot. I would imagine you're going to get a much more realistic picture of where Eli is in his career this year than what we saw last year.
I think we will as well. And no one can take away the two Super Bowls, and he might already have a minted gold jacket. I get all of that. But none of that helps him this season. And we are, Coach, you're the one who taught me this. For these top flight quarterbacks, you don't get to have everything perfect. He's got one of the best wide receivers in football. He's got, I think, going to be one of the best running backs in football. Got a first-round pick at tight end. Got a high draft pick at the other wide receiver position. Got the highest-paid left tackle in the league. Got a second-round pick at left guard. Like, okay, the right side of your offensive line has problems for this season. Nobody's got the perfect offense. If this offense isn't dynamic, unless Saquon is not at all the guy we think he is, or they have the spate of injuries again, it's going to be on number 10. That doesn't change what he did against the Patriots in those two Super Bowls, but I think that's fair. Like, we've talked a lot about quarterbacks that are these top guys, but they need this, they need that. Eli's got nearly all of it. Like, they gave him the left tackle this year. They drafted the running back instead of fortifying the defense, trading back in the draft, drafting his replacement. Odell's back. I don't know of many quarterbacks in a better position to succeed going into a season than Eli Manning is.
Well, you also have to look at the fact that it is a new offensive system, and he is working with a new philosophy and a new head coach. So there is going to be part of this, especially early in the season, where they're figuring out each other, and they're trying to understand what makes the other part work and what makes it work really well. So I would imagine early on there may be a few bumps, but you're right. He's gotten a lot of really positive things that he didn't have last year, and that's why I agree with you that we're going to get a picture of who Eli is at this point in his career with this group offensively.
I think Eli is going to have, like, the comeback player of the year type season.
Wow. Yeah.
Well, I mean, Odell's going to get him 1,400 yards. That's going to get everything started. They're going to be able to run the football. Like, the Giants should be back.
I like Evan Engram, too. I think he's going to do a really good job.
That's one of Nick's guys, too.
Yeah, I think he's got a chance to have a breakout season. Yeah, okay.
Scratch him off because I like him. That's
off my fantasy team.
Coach, stick around. Coming up, are the Cowboys setting up Dak Prescott to fail? That's next on First Things First. Moving on to football now, Doug Peterson had some interesting things to say about another team. In his new book, Peterson was critical of the Jaguars' lack of aggressiveness in the AFC title game. When the Jags knelt before halftime, Peterson said, quote, if they lose this game, this is why. Nick, is Peterson out of bounds here?
I don't think he's out of bounds because I appreciate the honesty. It's his book. He can say what he wants. I think it's odd for a coach to criticize another coach's coaching decisions that shortly after it happened when they're both going to have to go up against each other. But I don't blame him for it. I will say this. In real time, I didn't think they were making a mistake. I didn't trust Blake Bortles either. I thought the Jags were in great position going into halftime against the Patriots. They just couldn't close the game.
Yeah, I love Doug because that's the way he was coaching his team. Every season is different. Every team is different. He had to have that approach, and we saw that when he let Nick Foles throw the ball and throw it off to the NFC Championship, and we saw that in the Super Bowl. That's why they won, because they were aggressive throwing the football. So I like it because he followed it up.
All right, Adrian Peterson signed with Washington this week and had some interesting comments for his naysayers. Peterson said his doubters, quote, don't really know anything about football. What do you think about that, CeCe?
No, you don't have to know an awful lot about football to realize a running back in his 30s is not going to have a long shelf life. So, Adrian, some of the things that football players think, oh, man, they didn't play, they don't know. We do know about the athletic body. And you are not the guy you were 5 years ago. I believe it would be challenged to be 700-yard rusher this season. I just hope that he's able to stay healthy. He's had a great career. I hope that he's able to have the type of year he would be satisfied with.
Listen, I think 500 yards would be an impressive year from him. He only needs 40 to move into the all-time top 10 rushing.
And that's
mark
huge.
And to pass Jim Brown, that'd be great. I understand this mentality, though. This is the mentality that made him the best running back in football the first day he stepped on the field, the best running back in football 6 months after blowing his ACL. That mentality has gotten him here. Eventually, though, the doubters are proven right on a long enough time frame.
All right, ending with the Steelers now. Ben Roethlisberger is set to make his preseason debut Saturday against the Titans. Big Ben says his arm feels stronger than it ever has. CeCe, what do you make of Roethlisberger's confidence entering year 15?
Well, I'll play five more years. I'm in the best shape of my life, and my arm is a certifiable rocket these days.
I think I told you guys that this is what good and great players do when they want to send the message to the organization or to teammates that, you know something, I plan on being around. Or if they are concerned about a contract, the only way that you can justify that is, hey, you know, I don't know how long I'm going to play. I'm feeling pretty good. Hey, you know something? I came in here to this work this morning and I feel stronger than ever.
Yeah.
Like, yes, but can Ben be consistent? Last year, after a bad game, a reporter asked him a question, maybe just flip comment. Well, maybe I should quit the game. Maybe I should give up. A couple off seasons ago, don't know how long, much more longer I can play this game. I'm banged up. Just be consistent, Ben, with your message. He's one of the best quarterbacks that we have seen play in the NFL. He can play a long time.
Absolutely.
He's a freakish athlete. He is built like the old throwback quarterbacks, and he has kind of maintained or lack of maintained the fitness level a lot like the old throwback quarterbacks did.
The thing you mentioned about the contract, I do think is noteworthy. He's got 2 years left on his deal. He's the 12th highest paid quarterback in football this year. Next year, he's scheduled to be the 12th highest paid quarterback. You don't make franchise quarterbacks play out the final year of their deal like Drew Brees has, but typically that doesn't happen. It's hard, though, for his agent to go to Pittsburgh and say, give Ben a contract extension when he is saying, I don't know how much longer I'm going to play. He's now saying, best shape, best arm, five more years. Now his agent's in a better position midway through the season to go to Pittsburgh and say, hey, let's start working on a contract extension, a little more money. So I think that has part to do with this as well.
36-year-old Ben Roethlisberger wants to play 25 more years of football. Moving on to college football now. The preseason AP poll is out. And for the third straight season, Alabama comes into the year ranked number one. Nick Saban is looking for his second straight title and sixth since coming to Tuscaloosa. And to break it down this season, we've got our guy, Fox College analyst Joel Klatt. Hey, Joel, it's great to have you on the show again.
It's good to be here. How are you guys this morning?
We are good.
We're
getting
great.
Excited. Weather's changing. College football's back in the conversation. Let us start right there with Alabama, who was named number one in the AP poll for the third straight year, as we discussed. All right, Joel, who is the best chance of dethroning Alabama?
It's a great question because not many have been able to step up to that plate and actually do what you just asked, which is dethrone Alabama. You know, at some point during every season dating back to 2008, they have been number one in the AP poll. They're going to start there this year. They start there for the third straight year, like you just mentioned. This program is on a different level right now. We've never seen this in the history of college football, the level of dominance that Nick Saban and Alabama are showing. He's 66-4 at home in Tuscaloosa since 2008 with five national titles, which means that in 10 seasons of football, he's got more national championships than he does home losses. It's incredibly difficult to dethrone this team. The Tide are phenomenal. They're the elite program in the country. If there were a couple that I was looking at this year, it would be Clemson and Ohio State for very different but specific reasons. Clemson, because their talent level is at or near what Alabama's is, and they're going to have maybe the best defensive front that we've seen in college football history with four guys that will likely get selected in the top two rounds in the NFL draft, maybe three all the way up into the first round. And then for Ohio State, I actually think Ohio State's going to look much more similar to what they were in 2014 with a vertical passing threat, Dwayne Haskins as their quarterback, and a great running game, really, with J.K. Dobbins as the lead back there. So those are the two teams that I'm looking at that could possibly have the talent and the blueprint to go out there and beat Alabama.
Joel, there's probably five maybe quarterback controversies or five quarterback battles of the teams in the top 10. Let's go back to Alabama. How do they resolve that quarterback controversy that they have there? Because I would say that's the most explosive one in college football.
Yeah, I've got a couple of guys that I know that are Alabama boosters, and they're actually able to go to practice, and they're sworn to secrecy, but I got them to talk a little bit. Tua is going to be the starter. I fully expect him to be the starter. This is the type of kid that gives them their best chance to win. He throws the football extraordinarily well, which we saw in that national championship game. But I do think Jalen Hurts is going to play this year. See, in this day and age, it's so rare for a guy to go out there and not get hurt. So whether it's play or injury, I think both guys are going to have to play in big moments. Now, it needs to be noted that Jalen Hurts is the safer choice. Remember, Nick Saban does not want his quarterback out there taking chances. And last year in the national championship game in the second half, Saban was forced to play Tua. So he had to live with the bad interception. He had to live with the terrible sack because he got really the icing on the cake with that second and 25 strike down the left sideline for a touchdown in overtime. But how long does Nick Saban live with those type of mistakes, even though Tua is the more exciting and talented passer? We'll have to wait and see.
All right, let's talk about the last team that actually did dethrone Alabama, Clemson. They also have a question at quarterback with Kelly Bryant and Touchdown Jesus, but they also then have three potential top 10 picks, as you mentioned, playing D-line. How much does their quarterback situation even matter when you have that talent up front, and who do you think wins that battle?
Well, here's another interesting aspect, because these battles are not what they have been in the past. Nick, remember, this year the eligibility rule changes. And players can play in four different football games and retain their red shirt. So if you're Dabo Swinney, why in the world would you name a starting quarterback? You can essentially allow the battle to happen throughout the entire month of September, then land on the starter and still retain a red shirt for a guy like Trevor Lawrence if, in fact, you go with Kelly Bryant. So this is why we're seeing so many teams go into the season without naming a starting quarterback. It's because you can see it play out on the field. Now, in week two, they're going to have to go to College Station. They're going to have to play Texas A&M. I think leaving College Station, we're going to know everything we need to know about Clemson, in particular on that defensive side, and more in particular at the quarterback position. But I have a hunch that Trevor Lawrence will be the guy long term. I've seen him play. The guy's a phenomenal player, and a lot like Tua Tagovailoa for Alabama. This is the type of guy that gives him a little bit different dynamic throwing the football down the field.
Joe, let's move over to the Big Ten. You talked about Dwayne Haskins, some of his ability. Although Cordell, we saw that in 2014, them throwing the ball down the field. What about the distractions that the Buckeye Nation right now, we don't know what's going to happen. Not a lot of words are coming out of Columbus. What's going to happen with Urban Meyer, a very, very good friend of mine. How do the Buckeyes handle that this year, Joe?
Well, I mean, we're going to find out today. Obviously, the Board of Trustees meet today, and they're going to essentially give their recommendations upon what's going to happen with the personnel there within the athletic department. But having said that, if you would, and this is what's so difficult about a situation like this, no matter how terrible the situation is, there's still the ability to analyze the football. And let's face it now, these kids tend to be more resilient than players in the NFL. And one of the reasons is because this is their sanctuary. This is where all of those distractions can kind of go away, is when they get into the building and when they get onto the field. You see, I was actually a part of a very similar occurrence back in 2003, 2004. Gary Barnett, my head coach, was suspended for a spring while they looked into allegations, a wide range of allegations at the University of Colorado. And I can tell you that because all of the things that were happening in the media were outside of football, that our team felt its most comfortable on the field. And I think that's where Ohio State's going to feel their most comfortable. This is one of the most talented teams in the country. I think that they're going to challenge for the Big Ten and the national title this year. And even with all of those distractions, because of those distractions are off the field, I think football can be a sanctuary for those kids.
All right, Joel, let's talk about Ohio State's arch rival, Michigan. Now that Jim Harbaugh has chosen his quarterback, Shea Patterson, we talked about this a little earlier on in the show. How much pressure is Harbaugh under now in year four?
I think he's under more media pressure than he is internal pressure at Michigan. The fact of the matter is that Michigan is in an exponentially better spot with Jim Harbaugh as their coach than when he was not their football coach. This is a program that has competed at the top end of the Big Ten. Even if they haven't won that division and ultimately a conference championship in those years, they were a punt, drop punt snap and a poor snap away from essentially being in the playoff maybe in a couple of those seasons. And that's with some pretty average quarterback play. You go into this season, this is going to be a top five defense in the country led by Don Brown, their defensive coordinator. He's got the most talented quarterback he's had at the college level since Andrew Luck and Shea Patterson, the transfer from Ole Miss. I fully expect Michigan to contend for a playoff spot this season. The narrative that this guy is underperforming at Michigan is media-driven, and it's false. Those that don't like him press this. Networks that don't like him press this. The fact of the matter is he's one of the six or seven best coaches in America. His record proves that out, and this year this is going to be a very good Wolverines team.
All right, Joel, before you leave, it was the last question, one of your pet peeves. Let's talk about playoff expansion. Barry Alvarez says we got to go to six. Now, it's not the eight I'd prefer, but it's a step in the right direction. What's your response to Barry?
That's terrible. It's a terrible idea, and I hope it never happens, quite frankly. And I fully expect everybody within the sport to argue for more entrance into the college football playoff because that means more money for those entrants. Listen, if we care about the sport, if we care about the regular season, if we want to maintain the relevance of regular season games, in particular in the non-conference or even in conference play, we need to keep this playoff at one less than there are power conferences. Listen, I could go on a dissertation about this. Mm-hmm. I've got a whole model that works out much better than your eight teams, but I will tell you this. College football has to keep this at four, or else we're going to ruin what is the most unique and most important regular season in all of sport. And anyone that argues otherwise is just, quite frankly, not looking at the facts.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.